Today, my little baby is 10. Last night when she was going to bed, she was like, this is my last night ever of being single digit. And I don't want to wake up tomorrow. And just like, she doesn't want to grow up. She doesn't want to grow up. I feel really lucky that I have a kid that isn't eager to grow up. She's still very much a kid, but she's also very mature too. So
I love that. You know, Jasmine is special. She is one of my favorite little peoples, and I've met a lot of little peoples, and she has got such a sweet spirit about her. So I love that she doesn't want to grow up. I don't want her to grow up either. So tell her to stop it.
She doesn't want to grow up so bad that even though all of her adult teeth are starting to come up, her baby teeth are still hanging on for dear life and won't come out. So we're going to get one of them pulled, because it came out, it was so loose, it doesn't even have any roots, but now the gums have grown up over it and the new tooth is coming through. So we have to go and get, they were like in July at her last dentist appointment, they were like, okay, let's just keep an eye on this next time. You know, it'll probably come out on its own. And they're like, yeah, no, it's not going anywhere.
Oh my.
Like, I want to be a little baby forever with baby teeth. Get that sucker out of there, and she's got to grow up. Like it or not, we all have to.
I would been telling my Tori just turned 18, and I was telling her the other day, and I've been telling her consistently for years, like, enjoy being a kid. And she broke down crying the other day and it said, okay, I get it now. Now I'm an adult and I don't want to be, I'm not ready for it. And I said, baby, you don't have to be ready for it. You know, you just enjoy that you have a mom and a dad that love you. And we want to supply and make sure you have a good life and support you. And you might not figure it out today and tomorrow. And I don't need you to, I just need you to enjoy being a kid a little bit longer, please. So I think she's like, yeah, and I'm like, good, you know, it's crazy
growing up. But it's also really beautiful to see them grow up. I have, you know, now a 24-year-old that he got his own health insurance. And I'm like, oh my God.
Stop it. How on
earth? But yeah, raising kids is an honor and a privilege. And it's challenging sometimes, but I'm really grateful. And I'm excited to talk to Jacqueline today, because we talked to her. Oh gosh, I can't even remember when it was, but she was getting ready for her embryo transfer,
wasn't it?
Yeah. And now she's getting ready to welcome her daughter through surrogacy. And I think her story is one of those that is so powerful and moving, and she's so generous to be willing to share it with others, because it is a heartbreaking story and would be hard, you know, to share. And I'm just grateful that there are moms like her who are open to that, so that women like us can be grateful for the power that we do have to bring healthy pregnancies and to share that with others who are not able to, and to understand why, how people get here.
So Jacqueline is really special. Yeah. And I know we talk with women all day long, every day, about surrogacy and who are the parents that choose to go this route. And this is just one small example of somebody who has courage to share their story. And I know that in what Jacqueline is going to share is really going to be hard and devastating, but there's some glory and some joy in that too. And just knowing that we have the opportunity to, as surrogates, understand why we do this. And I don't know, I'm really excited. I was really excited when we did the podcast with her the last time. So this is going to be a good opportunity for us to get to know her a little bit more. And I'm really excited. Really excited.
I never, I'm like, okay, awkward starting. We need to learn from an expert, Jacqueline, because you've been running your podcast for a while and we're still really green. And so I get so anxious every time we're about to record a podcast, and then it's great. But leading up to it, I'm like, so anxious.
I totally get it. And honestly, it's always changing. It's always a learning curve. Once I finally have one thing down pat, I'm like, oh, I should level up a little and use this product or do this. And so there's always a little bit of nerves around something. So I get it.
Well, and I listened to our podcast that we did with you, and it was so good. And you had really put it together quite nice and cutting it all up. And I was like, okay, that's what we need to strive for.
Well, Glad I could help.
We actually recently had this idea of doing icebreakers, questions that we can ask that are like super silly and fun, really to kind of like kickstart it, get us giggling and a little bit loose before we have these more serious and necessary conversations. So could I start with an icebreaker and ask you a question?
Yeah, I love that.
Okay. So I think the one that I have here is, what's your favorite binge-worthy TV show or movie and why?
Ooh. Right now.
I know, right now. I would say my favorite binge, like, I'm going to say movie because it's like what I will toss on if I'm just like, you know, I want to listen to something, relax, make me laugh. It's a tie between Bridesmaids and Step Brothers. I swear I could
watch my favorite movie
like thousands of times and I will laugh the same as the very first time.
Oh, yes.
And then a TV show, Friends, is the first thing that comes to mind, which is probably a lot of people's go-to, but yeah.
I had a girls' weekend recently and we watched This Is 40. Have you seen that?
Yes.
That's and I kid you not, I was like crying, laughing the entire time just because it's like so relatable. I'm like, this is our life.
Yeah, to a T. I'm like, I think this movie's about us. I remember saying that to my husband. It's just too funny.
God, all the stress of it too. I remember what the couple, Paul Rudd and his like business and his struggles, and he's trying to like keep it from his wife and all of that. I remember just like, at the time that I watched that movie originally, Kyle had started his IT company and was like struggling and sinking. And I was like, what's going on? Yeah. And we related so much to that movie at the time. I was like, we weren't even 40 yet. Now he's going to be 45 and I'm going to be 42. Ooh.
Yeah. That's a good one. It's relatable.
And Casey's just a baby.
Yeah, listen, we don't talk about that. I do have an 18-year-old that just turned 18 the other day, which doesn't make me feel baby-like, but my blonde that I'm covering up to the gray hairs is going to allow that to be the case.
I don't believe you have any grays. I don't believe it one bit.
Oh my gosh.
I'm 36 and my husband is 40. He turned 40 last summer. And so I'm always, whatever age I am, I'm like, still young because I got like 5 years on me. So I'm hanging on to that.
This is as young as we're ever going to get. So
enjoy every moment of it. Exactly. Yeah.
My babyest baby turned 10 today. So,
that's amazing.
It's really happy sad. She's Jasmine. Growing up and that's the end. It's the end. Ugh.
My oldest is about to turn 6. And to me, that's like, oh my gosh, like this is his first year at kindergarten, full day school. And I'm like, where did the time go? You were my little preemie, like little tiny guy. And now he's just, you know, his own little person. It's crazy.
That's beautiful though, isn't it? It's really cool to watch them grow up. Every age is fun in its own way and challenging in its own way too.
For sure.
So I would love it if you introduced yourself. Tell us a little bit about yourself, kind of why you're here and what led you to have a podcast?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm Jacqueline, as you mentioned. I am a mom. I have my oldest is 6. I have 2 boys, a 6-year-old and almost 6-year-old and a 4-year-old. And I am the host and producer of the Motherhood Intended podcast and community. You know, my journey to motherhood has spanned over a decade. We are also, I should mention, I'm a mother to 2, but I'm also expecting, with the help of our surrogate, a baby girl due in April. So that's been pretty surreal. But like I said, over the last 10 years has kind of been my journey to motherhood, and our parenthood journey has included many things, IUIs and surgeries and IVF and loss and, you know, a preemie and a hefty NICU stay and now on to surrogacy. And so it's been a wild ride, but it is what has propelled me to start the Motherhood Intended podcast, I started it over a little over a year ago, and it's been great. I thought I started it just to help other people and give them what I felt like I didn't have when I was going through IVF and infertility and loss. you know, I was finding bits and pieces in like Facebook groups and things like that. But I just felt like everything I was experiencing wasn't being talked about enough. And so after we lost our last daughter, she was born stillborn at 20 weeks. You know, everything kind of came crashing down at that moment. And I really was just evaluating the last decade and what I kept piling on. I mean, I was so grateful and so grateful to have our boys and to have, you know, children on earth. But we had just been through so much and really hadn't taken a beat to just reflect. And so that's what I did for about a year after losing our daughter, Marin. And, you know, it was a lot of self-reflection. It was a lot of looking back on everything we have, everything we've been through. And that's when I really realized, I was like, wow, like I felt really alone during this point in time, or I didn't know what I was doing, or I wish I would have known this, or wish I would have had someone to talk to or relate to in this part of our journey. And so it was on like the 1 year anniversary of her passing that I decided I signed up for a podcast course. It was like an 8 week course. And, you know, I was like, I need to just start talking about it, because what I thought I had processed over the years with grief and loss, I really haven't, because with our two boys with us, you know, I was busy. I'm a busy mom with two little ones, two under two. And so what I thought was dealt with and managed really was just kind of like suppressed and pushed down. And I realized in order to be the best mom and keep moving forward, I need to get my story out and I need to talk about it. And I hope by sharing and being vulnerable, other women will feel not so alone in their journey. So that's kind of what propelled the podcast. And January of 2023, I launched it. And yeah, it started, I initially wanted it to help other people, but truly, it's been like therapy for myself, getting to meet so many people and educate myself on so many different things, and just getting my story out and being more open and talking about all the different aspects of my motherhood journey. So it's been really great. And it's led us to surrogacy, which is where we're at today. And it's just surreal that in a couple months we are expecting a baby. I just never thought it would happen again. So I'm still like in shock, but
So exciting. April, man, that's right around the corner.
What's your due date in April?
April 17th.
Okay. Oh. My birthday is April 13th. So I think April's a great month to be born and a great month to welcome a baby girl. I remember when we first talked to you last time, you were just getting ready for your embryo transfer, I think. So it's really exciting that you're at this stage.
I know.
So close.
It's been wild. It's like, it was so much waiting. I mean, I know you guys know this, but I mean, we spent, and I told you a little bit about this last time we talked, you know, we have the help of an agency, and it was a lot of figuring that out on our own at first, signing with an agency and then waiting. I mean, it felt like time stood still. And then the second we matched with our surrogate, it's like flown by, and it's been wild. But
how has that process been with the agency thus far, and then with your surrogate? What's that been so far for you? How's that felt?
Yeah, it's been really good. It's been awesome to have the support when we need it. I feel like we don't always know what we need. We went into this just knowing that we both have busy schedules and two kids at home, and we wanted, after everything we've been through, we really just wanted a seamless process. You know, we wanted all the T's crossed, I's dotted. We wanted someone to help us find that special person that was going to be our match, because there's just so much that goes into it that I did not realize. So I'm so grateful to have the help of professionals who have done this before. And our surrogate, this is her second surrogacy journey. So that has been so great as well, because I can just go to her and ask her a lot of questions about, you know, her experience, which has been awesome. So I feel like, I mean, they did such a great job, I feel like, matching us and our personalities, that we kind of have worked through a lot together. And I mean, the agency's always there and we have our milestones and certain calls with them. But I think just having her experience and getting to know each other has been the biggest help for us, to be completely honest.
Yeah. Have you guys started planning the birth prep for delivery day? Have you guys created your little birth plan of how you want that to go?
Yeah, we actually just had a call about that yesterday, because she'll be 31 weeks this week. We're actually going to go down there and visit in about 3 weeks. Yeah, she'll be about 33 weeks. We're going to go down there and we're going to bring our whole family, our boys with us. Cause we're in Chicago. Our surrogate is in Texas. So we're going to have our families meet. I was hoping our boys could, you know, see her pregnant and meet her kids and just really like bring it full circle. Cause you know, my boys, they know her name. They know that a special mommy is helping us and carrying, you know, our baby, and they know it's in Texas, all these things. But I think really meeting and just having that special moment with all of us together, I think is going to bring it full circle. So we went ahead and scheduled like one of those 4D ultrasounds. And so we could bring the kids and all do that and spend the day together. So really excited about that. But yeah, yesterday we had the call to discuss all the details of, you know, what the birth plan is and what that will look like, which is so funny. Just when I think I know what I'm doing or what we want, then we have the conversation. I'm like, oh, I didn't think about that. I'm like, oh, like labor. And I've never, and just not having, I mean, I know everybody has their own experiences and, you know, oftentimes everyone has their own story that leads to surrogacy, whether you have given birth yourself or most times you haven't. And, even though I have two children, my experiences were so unique. Like I had a scheduled C-section like 3 weeks early. And then I had, you know, my son was like born spontaneously at 24 weeks. And so I never really did a normal labor birth process. So I don't even know what that looks like. And I really realized that when, after we had this conversation, I was like, oh, right. Like, so you'll be laboring, like her previous history was like, she usually labors between 10 to 12 hours and then this and that. And they're like, what do you, how do you feel during it? What do you like? Do you like conversation? What do you like to do? And I'm like, oh my gosh, I've never, I just like in my head, I was like, okay, we go when it's time for baby to come and we'll just be there.
Yeah. Like I just, and then it'll come.
And now I feel much better, but it was very helpful to talk it all out.
Yeah, that is a different experience and really exciting that you get to be part of it and be present. Are you and your husband going to be present for the labor and delivery?
Yeah. So we're both going to be there, which will be nice. Yeah, it'll be new for all of us because my husband hasn't, you know, experienced that either. So he didn't know a lot of the questions. And at first I was like, how do you not know that? But then I was like, oh, it's not really your fault. Like I know these things because I'm a woman and I talk to a lot of moms, but you know, even something as simple as like, you know, cutting the cord, they were asking, like, they asked my husband, they're like, do you want to cut the cord? And he's like, no, I'm good. I'm good. because, you know, we didn't have the opportunity really with either of our sons and everything has just been so chaotic and like emergency in my situation. So he just didn't like think about it. And so I actually think I'm going to cut the cord. So.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. You should do it. That'd be really cool for you to be able to experience that. I know my intended mother cut the cord for her son and when I carried. And I think, I don't know if she was able to do it for her daughter, but the first one, they did let her cut the cord. And I know that was really special and do skin to skin right away. And
yeah,
it was so cool.
Not something I had thought about. It wasn't on my radar. And then when she said it, I was like, oh yeah, would love to be a part however I can. So,
I just love that. Gives me goosebumps every time I think about the delivery day as a surrogate. It's such a special moment because so much effort has gone into getting there from the surrogate, from the intended parents, from everyone. And there's just like, there's such an abundance of joy and love on a birthday anyway. But with surrogacy, I feel like it's such a big climactic event, you know, that you get to hold your baby and it'll be really special. I'm excited for you.
My favorite part.
I know. I think about it too, from her perspective. I'm like, I'm just going to want to like, I don't even know how to like hug you or say thank you in that moment. It's such a big deal. It's going to be wild, but amazing.
It'll be so cool. So, taking
lots of pictures.
I wonder too, since you started this community, it's just been about a year since you started. What have been your takeaways as far as the community that you've built and people that have connected with you and the need that was out there? What are some stories or connections that you've made in this process that make you sure that you're doing a good thing?
Yeah, I think I've been most surprised by like the ongoing questions that I constantly get. Like, new women are always coming into the fold, and it's not even necessarily, you know, someone might find the podcast or find the community to connect with other moms who have, you know, experienced a miscarriage or a loss, and then find themselves connecting with another mom or connecting with me about the topic of like a birth defect or something like that. You know, I've had a lot of women who have connected on multiple levels, whether just by their experiences. And I wasn't expecting that. I was like, okay, there's going to be moms and there's going to be women in this community who are trying to get pregnant and are going to want information on different ways to do that when navigating infertility or other family building options, learning what that is. And then there's going to be moms in here who can't relate to those things, but, you know, we'll talk about motherhood and things like that. And it's really been such a crossover that I wasn't prepared for. I thought it was like these two categories of people, but, and I thought I was the only one who had this like ridiculous story of all these different pieces. And I can relate to whether it was, you know, infertility or loss or, preemies and the NICU and, birth defects. And there, I just have like all these little pieces of my cervical and Convatex, like all these things that I was like, no one's ever gonna like get all of that like this is, and I hope they don't, because it's like a whole slew of things. But what surprised me the most is that there's always somebody who connects to one part of my story or another. So it's been really interesting just really diving deeper into each of those different aspects to help others and educate them. One of the things that recently someone locally to me is in like this mom workout class that I'm in and listen to the podcast. And she's like, I did an episode on birth defects in my sons. We talked about how my son was born with club feet. And I just kind of shared that story and the diagnosis and finding out and what his care looked like. And she messaged me, and we've known each other all the way, you know, since college. And she's like, I had no idea that your son had club feet. Like, mine does too. Like, I don't know anyone who has a child born with club feet. And, turns out we both had the same doctor and everything. And it was just really good to know that, like, wow, I knew this person like in actual real life, and she still didn't know this. I'm like, we should talk about it more. I've talked about her about so many things, like, you know, in passing, and, just knowing that we both could have shared this experience and supported each other was just another reminder that I just need to keep talking and keep bringing these topics up, because everyone wants to connect with someone who can understand just a sliver of like being in their shoes. It's comforting. It brings hope and education. I mean, I've learned the most from connecting with other people and groups and podcasts. And actually, I found my fertility doctor from the very first podcast that I ever listened to back in like 2014, I think it was. And she was just on this infertility podcast, and I kept listening, trying to figure out myself what was going on with me. And ended up eventually in my journey, having her as my doctor. And, you know, I've learned a lot about surrogacy from different podcasts and communities as well. So that's kind of what my hope is with Motherhood Intended, is to do the same thing and just be that resource for women, because it feels like, there's
it's necessary.
Yeah.
It's necessary. I think that's the biggest thing that I'm coming up against right now, is there are a lot of parents who, when they decide or that decision is made for them, that they're going to need to go either through IVF or specifically surrogacy, yeah, that's not an easy decision. And there's almost this quietness about them and not wanting to share it with anybody because they feel like they failed in some way. Yeah. And it's heartbreaking. Because I know that that's not the case. And if more women really truly talked about this, and parents as a whole coming to this place of needing, whether it be IVF or surrogacy, to conceive and have a child, I think that it would make it feel a little bit better for us all to be able to relate. We know your story, but I'd love for you to share kind of just your personal journey with IVF to becoming a mom and that experience and what led you there.
Yeah, absolutely. So, my husband and I, we got married. We always talked about wanting a big family. We wanted four kids. I'm one of four. He's one of three. That was just like, all right, but we were young. I was 25 when I got married, and I was like, okay, let's wait a year. That seems to be what we should do. People kept saying like, enjoy marriage or whatever. And I'm like, fine. I'm ready, but fine. So we waited a year. and started trying. And I don't know if it's my type A or what, but after 6 months, I was like, yeah, it still hasn't happened. And I just feel like something's off. So ended up going to getting referred. I told my OB that I had been trying for a year, because I remember her telling me, try for a year and come back. And I was like, I hear you, but I'm not going to do that. I just really felt like something was off. You know, I always had like horrible periods, and I just had this like gut instinct. And there was something going on. I mean, my thyroid levels, that wasn't the biggest thing. You know, I didn't have thyroid problems regularly, but my levels were off for like trying to conceive and fertility purposes. So I went on medication for that. And then the biggest thing right away was I had a blocked fallopian tube. So I had procedure to unblock that. And then we were sent off to like, okay, that's all we could find. You know, everything checked out with my husband. And so they were like, you know, sent us off to keep trying. And we tried for another 6 months, came back, and I was like, still not happening. And so it was at that point we decided to start with Clomid and IUIs. Not really knowing much about anything. My parents had secondary infertility. So had me and my sister had a loss. And then there's like 7 years in between me and my brothers, who are twins. And my mom had them via IUI with Clomid. And so she's just giving me her knowledge. And again, this was 30 years ago. So best knowledge they had at the time, they're like, oh, you just have Clomid and you can get pregnant. And so we tried, they said it would, if it's going to happen that way, if you're going to get pregnant, it'll take 3 to 4 tries. It's not going to happen that way, if it's going to take longer than that. So after 3 failed rounds, we tried one more, and we did them back to back, which was, for me, Clomid, the medication was just terrible on my body and my hormones and my, just everything. So on the 4th one, it did work. We were very excited to find out that, and I'll never forget that, because it was the very first positive pregnancy test I got. And then at our very first ultrasound, it showed that we were expecting twins. And that was just, we were overjoyed at that point, you know, just blissfully ignorant and positive, first time being pregnant, didn't even know what could happen, what to expect. You know, the 12-week mark hit, and you know, I just knew what I knew from like TV and my friends and everything, like, okay, don't say a word until 12 weeks. And then at 12 weeks, you know, I posted something on my Instagram or wherever I was posting back in 2015, 2016. And 2 weeks later, you know, started to have some spotting and went to my OB, and nothing. She's like, and I don't see anything. I don't notice anything. Heartbeats are fine. And then a couple days later, I out of the blue, like I literally was just going to the restroom and had some bleeding, and then the bleeding wouldn't stop. And it was like a lot. And I did not know what was going on, but I knew it was like an emergency. You know, I was 14 weeks at this point, and I thought that I did it. We passed like the mark of, you know, miscarriage and everything. And so but it got bad. So my husband called an ambulance, and I was taken to the nearest hospital. And, you know, just because of all the bleeding and my like status, we couldn't get to our hospital, which was, you know, like maybe 5 minutes further away. So I wasn't with my own doctor, which was kind of a bummer. And we were just in like triage or like in the ER. But they did an ultrasound, and, you know, I'll never forget the very first thing she asked, when the doctor came in, was like, did you say you were pregnant with twins? And I said, yeah, I'm 14 weeks along with twins. And she was like, I'm so sorry. Like we only see one baby on the ultrasound. And, you know, I was very confused, because just based on like the general knowledge that I had without ever being pregnant before, I was like, no, I've seen on TV where like they have a miscarriage or you find out that there's no heartbeat or something, but what do you mean you only see one baby in there? And so I really was only there for a few hours until they can, you know, stop the bleeding, make sure my vitals, everything was fine. And they were like, follow up with your OB tomorrow. And I was sent home. And I think I was just like in a daze, because I was like in shock. And so followed up with my OB the next day, and basically just for her to confirm the same thing, did an ultrasound. She's like, I'm so sorry. Like there's only one baby. but the heartbeat is good. We don't see any, you know, obstruction or anything in there that might cause this pregnancy to not continue, but we're going to have to keep an eye on you and you're going to have to be on bed rest. So for the next 2 weeks, I was on bed rest, no change, no anything, until one day I had spotting. And, you know, at the very little bit of anything that was wrong with me, I was going in at this point, obviously, to my doctor. And of course, it was a weekend, so my OB was at the hospital, actually. So I went into the hospital, and just I wasn't feeling contractions. Again, I'm 16 weeks along and I've never felt contractions anyway. So I wasn't in any kind of pain and didn't feel anything remotely like that. And they hooked me up to the belt to try and see if they could register anything. But it was just, I was not that far along, so they just couldn't. And there was no change, no nothing. So I was there pretty much all day. And then I remember at the end of the day, they were like, my doctor was like, do you want to, they're like, we haven't had any changes. There's nothing really else we can do. Do you want to be sent home or you can stay here? And at this point, I mean, I was just in like a triage room, because until you're 20 weeks along, you don't go to like any sort of like labor and delivery or anything like that. So I was like, I guess if you're comfortable with me going home, if there's nothing to change, I'll just go back to doing my bed rest at home. And it was later that night. You know, I remember watching a movie with my husband, and my mom had come over too, just to be there after everything. We pretty much were like always had two adults with me at all times, just because, I mean, it was very traumatic for my husband as well, all this and trying to figure it all out as first time parents and everything. And so later that night, you know, I started having some cramping, and in my opinion, it was less than like what I would experience with the period. And I used to have really bad periods. So this to me, it was like dull. And I was like, that's weird. Like, I think I'm okay. But then as the night went on, I mean, it was still far apart, but it was, you know, like 2 to 3 times, like every 20 minutes, I would feel something. And I'm like, okay, I don't know what's going on. And then it would go away. And I went to bed that night. And just to show that, like, I was in a deep sleep. I was not like uncomfortable to the point where I couldn't sleep. So I went to sleep. And in the middle of the night, it was like my body was on autopilot. Like, I got out of bed just because I knew something wasn't right. And I just like ran to our nearest bathroom. And in that moment, like I delivered our baby in the bathroom. Something else I did not know was even remotely possible. I didn't know anything about my cervix at that point, which ended up being an issue. I didn't know you could deliver that way. It just came out of nowhere. So obviously I'm screaming. My husband just calls 911. You know, the ambulance comes, and the rest is just a blur. And at this point, I like really am not doing well. I was losing a lot of blood. I remember being in the ambulance and them like asking me what my name was and to spell my name, and I couldn't do that. And my husband just kept begging, like, please go to our hospital. Like, it's 5 more minutes, like, this way. We want to be with our doctors that we trust. And, you know, we didn't love how everything was handled the first time, but it's over the years, as I've processed the story more and more, you know, everyone, every doctor, every person has their lane. You know, I was in the ER. They are not an OB. They're not a therapist. They're not anything. They're just there to make sure that I'm okay and tell me the situation. So, but at that time I was like, I need to be at our hospital. So, we got there, and I remember I was like getting sick, and I was in really bad shape. And of course the whole time I'm just thinking like, where is my baby? You know, and it's a weird blessing in disguise that I'm like pretty blind. I wear contacts usually and glasses. And because this was the middle of the night, I like, you know, just popped up. Everything is literally very pretty blurry for me. And in a way, I think it's kind of, you know, like guarded my heart a little bit, just as I've like replayed everything in my head. But, you know, my husband was there and witnessed way more than I did. And you know, not only is he worried for my safety, but, you know, dealing with the loss of our babies, and no one can prepare you for that, whether you're the man or the woman, as parents, no one can prepare you to experience that. So following that, you know, I was in the hospital, and they had like a cuddle cot, with our daughter, Cecilia, we named her. And I was afraid to see her. I remember she was like behind a curtain, and I know we talked about this earlier, but like different feelings that come up, you know, throughout like an infertility journey. And I just felt like shame. I felt like I failed not just, you know, my husband, but our family. It was going to be the first grandchild for my parents. And of course, our parents rushed to the hospital to make sure that, you know, just to be there for us. And I remember I just like couldn't make eye contact. They came in the room and they were able to see our daughter, which was, you know, actually really helpful for them too. And, but I just remember I couldn't even look anyone in the eye. I just felt like a shell of myself just laying there. And so eventually, you know, I was scared to see, to hold her, to see her, you know, I didn't know what a 16-week gestation baby looked like. I was just afraid. And I'm really glad that this one nurse like persisted. And she's like, I asked again, like later after, you know, I calmed down, just like, do you want to hold her? Like, do you want to see her? She's perfect. You know, 10 fingers, 10 toes. She's perfect. And I'm so glad that I got the opportunity to hold her and they took pictures of her. And yeah. And so following that was grief, lots of grief. But not knowing what to do with it and deal with it. And, you know, at that time we don't have kids at home. So we both kind of jumped back into our work and I knew nothing about postpartum either. I mean, I didn't get that far. I was just figuring out pregnancy. So I just thought I feel sad for myself looking back, but it's like, I just didn't feel worthy of anything. I was like, oh, I'm fine. I mean, I didn't even carry that long. I didn't do this or that, but I know now what that looks like. And, you know, it's part of the thing I try to help other women too, is that, you know, when you experience a loss, whether it's in the first trimester or second trimester, whatever, you had a baby, like you were pregnant and your body went through things, you emotionally, hormonally. I mean, there's just so much that goes into it. So, I wish I would have known to give myself grace, because it definitely delayed a lot of, me processing my emotions and everything. So under all like the grief and shock of it all, you know, we also just were really, really longing to have a family. You know, we thought we figured out, okay, well, no one seems to know. And there was no follow-up. They did genetic testing and, it was two daughters. We named our other daughter Charlotte, and, they genetically, everything was perfectly normal. They couldn't find anything wrong at the time. And it was kind of just chalked up as, which I have a different opinion on this now and after my whole journey and learning a lot more. But at the time they were just like, it's, you know, a multiple pregnancy. It's a high risk pregnancy. And, you know, at looking back, no, to deliver the, that early in that way. It's one thing to lose a pregnancy, but to actually deliver showed a lot more things that it was pointing to. So, but we didn't know that then. So after like 6 months, we decided we were ready to try. We were going to go back to Clomid and IUIs because we're like, okay, that's what we did to get pregnant and it worked. Well, after three more failed cycles, and again, my body just never really had a break. You know, it was just like pumped with the meds, pregnancy, loss, postpartum, and back into it just because of lack of knowledge. And that is, you know, another reason why educating others is so dear to my heart, because I just wish I would have known so much more back then. And so instead of doing a fourth one, we were like, this is getting ridiculous. I think we need a second opinion. And it was when we, that's when I switched over to the doctor that I found from the original podcast I listened to. And she was like, the first thing she said was, I'm so sorry, like for everything that you've been through. And like, let's figure this out. Like, I'm here to help you. Like, let's look at this. And you know, she suggested that we go to IVF. She's like, if I were your doctor, I would have never had you do that many cycles, especially after your loss. You know, that takes such a toll on you physically, mentally. And I don't know if it was because my last doctor was a man and she was a woman. I just really felt extra connected to her. She had been through infertility herself. So I just felt like she understood what I was going through. And so it was at that time we did IVF. And we finally got to a place where we were just grateful to be able to do IVF and felt really confident and hopeful in the whole process. I think the year prior, if someone would have said like, oh, why don't you just do IVF? I was like, this feels so final. Like my body really can't do it alone or, you know, with minimal help. But to anyone now, I would just say like, there's no shame in doing IVF and having my two boys here through IVF and having the embryo to use for my daughter via surrogacy, you know, again, my kids are 4 and 6 and I don't look at them every day. And I'm like, wow, I made you through IVF. Like, I don't think about that remotely. So, while it seems scary, it was just the best option for us. And, again, I think it's relative and different experience for everyone, but IVF for me, I thought was very manageable. Again, I think maybe my type A, I liked how controlled everything was. There wasn't like this guessing or you take a pill and we're just like trying. It was like every single step of the way is very controlled. And we were given really good statistics on success rates. And so we did one round and we got 8 embryos. And at that time I was 29, my husband was 34. And, you know, my doctor was like, we were debating whether we should do genetic testing. And I definitely did not know as really much about it. At that point, she was just like, well, you're young and, you know, you don't have like a family history of anything specific. So, you know, I don't think it's necessary for you guys. Hmm. And we never really thought about it again. At the time, we were just like, that's another added expense. And, you know, IVF, everything's relative, but IVF at the time felt very expensive and just like a lot. And I don't know how it worked out because at that point, you know, we did a fresh transfer the very first time, with embryo was not tested. And that's my son, Hunter, who is about mm-hmm. to be 6. And, my journey with his pregnancy is long, but I will give the cliff notes because his whole NICU stay alone is like a whole hour long thing. So my pregnancy with Hunter was fine until 13 weeks. And of course, you know, for anyone who's ever experienced a loss, you know that you have these like weird markers in your head of like, okay, I'm just going to get to this week. If you lost pregnancy at 8 weeks, you're like, all right, if I get to 9 weeks, I'll feel better. So in my head, I was like, I have to get to 17 weeks. And, actually it wasn't 13 weeks. Sorry. It was 17 weeks. This is why at 17 weeks I had spotting and they were like, okay, your cervix is actually open, 2 centimeters at 17 weeks, which obviously should not be opening at all, even remotely around that time. So I had a rescue cerclage placed, to help keep my cervix closed. And they said it was successful. Like this will hold. And it was at 23 weeks that I went in for a routine appointment, no symptoms or anything, felt totally fine. My husband was out of town for work. So my mom came with me to the appointment and my doctor, she was the head of the practice who I saw that day. And she was like, I don't normally do a cervical exam, you know, at 23 weeks or whatever. She's like, but given your history and the fact that you have this cerclagen, I really just, to be safe, I just want to check it. And sure enough, even with the cerclagen, my cervix was dilated. And, you know, the look in her face was like, at this point, I'm 23 weeks and a couple of days. And she was like, where's your husband right now? And you know, I looked at my mom and I looked at her, I'm like, he's in Kansas for work. And she's like, okay. She turned to my mom. She's like, I'm going to need you to get him on the phone and I'm going to need you to tell him to come home. And she looked at me and she's like, you're going to be fine. She said, but we are having you go to the hospital and you're going to be there until this baby is born. And of course I just burst out into tears because every time we kept thinking we fixed one piece of the puzzle in our journey, something else would come crashing down. And I was like, okay, we figured out how to get pregnant. I stayed pregnant. I'm 23 weeks. Like, I fixed the cerclage, you know, everything I thought we were fine. And then, you know, and at that point I was just like, okay, I'm 23 weeks. I can't be in the, I mean, I'll do it. I'm like, but we're not even remotely close to 40 weeks. So what do you mean I'm going to be in the hospital until he's born? And like, it didn't even cross my mind at that point that he could be born like as early as he was. I was just like, well, I'm in the hospital. They're going to handle it. They've got this. It'll be fine. I'm just going to have to be here, which whatever. I ended up being on bed rest for 8 days and it was the kind of bed rest where I was like, could not get out of bed at all. It was like, lay flat, don't move. Don't even sit up on an incline. They gave me steroids to help develop his lungs in the event of an early delivery. magnesium, all the things that they could to be proactive for his birth. And again, without warning, on the eighth day, I'll never forget it, 'cause it was just my husband there with me. And it was like early in the morning, and he was at the hospital with me like every day, staying overnight on this like couch thing. And, I hadn't gone, this is probably TMI, but I had not gone to the bathroom, like gone number two in like 8 days, because I'm just laying there, and they didn't let me get up. And I like could not do that situation laying in bed. And so she was like, okay, you know what? Nothing has changed. So I think it's okay if we just, you know, bring a commode in and have you at the side of the bed. And I was like, okay, fine. I will try it. 'Cause I was just feeling like this weird pressure, and that's what I thought it was. Mm-hmm. And so I told my husband, I was like, okay, I know you've seen a lot of things in our short few years of marriage, but I'm going to need you to leave the room. Like, yeah. I need some privacy.
Please.
Let's just like, draw a line and keep some mystery in our marriage. And so I was in there by myself. She gave me the call button. She's like, if you need help at all, press this button. No sooner did, you know, the nurse and my husband and nurse walk out, and I like stood up to go, and I knew something wasn't right. I like felt like a shift, like a, almost like I felt like a drop, like a pressure all of a sudden. And so I rang the button, and the nurse came in, and she took one look at me, and she like had me lay down, and she's like, all right, he's coming, push. And I pushed one time, and he was born. And obviously he was born at 24 weeks and 5 days. So prior to that, we were given a million statistics of, you know, his chance of survival, his chance of cerebral palsy, is like all the things that could happen with a 24 weeker. And we had to decide, you know, resuscitation stuff and sign all these things, because they were prepared for it. I mean, they had the incubator right there. The team was ready to take him off to the NICU. And, it was another weird blessing, because that happened at like 6:58 in the morning, and shift change is at 7 a.m. So there was like double the amount of nurses and doctors right in the hallway. And I swear, when they ring that buzzer, like 80 people came running in. And I'm sure from my husband's perspective, I mean, he's in the hall, everyone just rushes into my room. I mean, it was like a snapshot in my brain now. It was crazy. But, you know, they were working on him right away. And I guess he was stable enough, because I'll never forget, the doctor came in, and like he was wrapped our son in like this like foil blanket thing, obviously to keep him warm. And she's like asking for a phone to like take a picture of us. And all I can think was like, oh my God, save my baby. Like, I don't care about this picture. But of course they knew more than I did, and he was stable, and it took like 1 second. For me, it felt like eons, because I was just like, get him out of here, do whatever you have to do. And now I'm really grateful to have that photo, because it's like all I have of that time. And you know, our first moment holding him, which is hard to look at still. I mean, even though he's here and healthy now, looking back at that first moment is just like, it's hard. But yeah, he ended up spending 120 days in the NICU. A lot of things took place during that time. A lot of things that were very scary, but typical of a baby born that premature. So he had a grade 3 brain bleed that had to be helped. He had, I forget what it stands for, but it's called PDA of the heart. And it's basically like a little valve that doesn't mature. And so he had to have surgery to fix that. And of course, we had found this out at the 20-week scan, that he had club feet. So his feet were like very turned in. So we didn't know he'd be born so soon, but we knew that he would have physical therapy and surgery and casts and stuff to correct that, which ended up being another weird blessing. But because he was born so premature, I mean, his feet were corrected. So they were able to work with him with physical therapists and stuff so early on, and his bones were so like malleable that it was actually in his benefit. And he recovered a lot quicker, and the whole process with his feet was much quicker than a baby who would have been born, you know, full term. So while that was hard to see too, like I'm like, oh my gosh, one more thing on top of another for him. And you know, there's this whole layer of, you know, guilt. I feel guilty for him and everything he's experiencing and how he was chaotically brought into this world. And but it's funny how as the years go by, you look at different stories differently, because, you know, like I said, my son's about to be 6, and this is his first year of kindergarten. And they picked one student from each grade at this, at a recent school assembly, and to win an award. And my son won the resilience award for his grade. And I was like, they don't even know. Like, he's a 24-weeker that, like, they have no idea how resilient he is. And he continues to amaze us every day. I'm like, this was your plan. I don't know why, but this was the plan for you. And you are, like, meant to be here, because he just surprises me every day. And so I do remember in that whole NICU journey, I remember the nurses just being like, you guys are always so positive. Like, you're just so happy and positive in this room. Like, we don't see that a lot in the NICU. And honestly, I think we were just, like, ignorantly positive, but also there was such a buildup of trying to get pregnant, trying to become parents. And we were just so grateful that he was even here, and we felt like he was in good hands. And so we were just happy to be parents and be able to see him and take care of him and eventually bring him home. And it really shaped that was the first time it really shaped our view of parenthood and what that meant to us and how grateful we were to be parents. And so it was after that, after Hunter's delivery, that, you know, we finally eventually, once focus was on him, and eventually we're like, so what happened? What do you think about my body? And they were like, we definitely think it's, you know, cervical incompetence based on the twin delivery and delivering him early, and even having the cerclage and that not holding, like, your cervix just will not hold a pregnancy. So it was after that. And I don't think we would have, like, looked into all these different options. And I think our journey would have looked a lot differently had we not done IVF and had 8 embryos. I think we maybe would have looked into different options of family building, but we had these embryos. So we kind of kept pushing forward with, like, okay. And at this point, I knew nothing about surrogacy. I was just like, okay, well, what can I do to keep fixing my body and, like, do this? And so I was referred to one of the best doctors in the country, who happened to be in Chicago for incompetent cervix. And he's retired now, but did a procedure called an abdominal cerclage. And so it's a little more invasive because you have to have surgery, and it's permanent, like, it stays in there, but they are able to close the cervix from the top. It's basically this band made out of a different material that goes on the top of your cervix. And it's 99% effective and keep holding that closed. And so the only stipulation is that you have to have a C-section, and it has to happen no later than 38 weeks. They don't want you going into labor because they don't want you contracting.
They don't want you to rupture something, because imagine that would be really dangerous.
Right. Gosh. Yeah, that's exactly it. And so from my point of view, I was like, okay, well, I don't care how my baby's getting here at this point. You know, I just, you know, if that's what we need to fix it, then fine. So I had that done. And then the following year, we did another embryo transfer, and we kind of did it a little bit early. We did it the month that Hunter turned 1, and we were like, well, I think we got lucky on the first try, like, that it happened right away. We know these embryos aren't tested. Let's just start it now. And, you know, in case we have to do another round, or we don't want to do them back to back. Well, it worked on the first try again, and I got pregnant with my son, Noah, who was 4. That pregnancy, every story always says my pregnancy went fine until, and it always goes a little bit further, but this time it was fine until about, I'm trying to remember, until like 23 weeks. And then I had some spotting, so I went in, and I was actually registering contractions at that point. And they're like, okay, we're going to have to admit you, do an ultrasound, figure out what the heck's going on. You know, my cervix was not the issue. My cervix was closed. But they can't have me, obviously, in preterm labor, especially because of, risk of uterine rupture. So I ended up being on bed rest for a month in the hospital. Oh, gosh. And it was, based on the ultrasound that they did, it was polyhydramnio. So I had excessive fluid and could not figure out why. Genetic testing, you know, in the pregnancy with my son didn't lead to anything. They didn't have an answer as to why. So their biggest thing was, I was put on magnesium to stop the contractions. They did give me steroids just in case. Obviously, at this point, I know at 23 weeks, you know, having a son born at 24 and 5, I know it's not even remotely, like, viability really doesn't mean anything to me anymore, because I watched him develop outside of me, and it's not enough time. Like, I'm like, Yeah, at 35 weeks at least, and then maybe I'll feel okay. So after a couple weeks, the first week and week or two were kind of scary because we just kept trying to stop the contractions, and finally everything leveled out. My fluid levels kept going down, which was good. I think the second 2 weeks, they really just kept me out of caution, and I was fine with that, even though it was really hard because mostly for my husband, he was home. We had a 1.5-year-old at home. And he's working full time and he's trying to come up and visit me because I'm there for a month. I mean, it was a really, really hard time for him. And it's still over the years, we unpack little pieces of our story just from, you know, because we're just trying to stay afloat for so long. And now that everything is kind of settled, and I'm sure, you know, as the years go by, we'll reflect more even on our surrogacy journey with each other. But those are one of those times that at the moment, I didn't realize how much he was struggling, you know, because he didn't show it, but it was a lot on his plate. So eventually I was sent home they got me to the third trimester. At 28 weeks, I was sent home and I was on like a modified bed rest, and they moved my C-section date up just out of caution. So I made it to my scheduled C-section date at 30, I think it was 37 and 1. Mm-hmm. And my son was born healthy, and just to me, he looked huge. He was a pretty average sized baby, he was 7 pounds, I think. But I will never forget seeing him for the first time because I was just like, oh my gosh, like, how did that? Like, he's ginormous. Like, and I never knew at the time, like, how special that moment was going to be for us, because I mean, that was the last time that I was going to give birth to a baby that I would bring home, and the only time I went full term with a pregnancy. So it was just, I have photos of that moment, and it was it's so special to us. And so after that, you know, he was born November 2019, and then COVID hit, and that was, not a lot of people in the world will probably agree with this. Some might, but like for us, it was like a really good time because of slowing down and focusing on what we had. It was the first time in years that we were not thinking about fertility stuff. We were not thinking about trying to get pregnant. We were just really focused on our two young children and being home and calm and present and recovering and processing and all the things. So it was really helpful for our family during that time. And of course, I, you know, think that we now have really figured this out. I brought home a full-term healthy baby, you know, only in the hospital a few days, came home like it's supposed to be. And so we had plans. We wanted to wait longer than we did between our boys. So we were like, okay, maybe the fall of 2021, you know, by the time we have the baby, you know, 3 years in between our youngest. And I guess God had other plans, because it was that spring of 2021. And this has been 8 years now. I have not been on birth control, have not been able to get pregnant on my own. And I got pregnant naturally. And I was like happy and scared. And I don't know. It's just wild. I had the cerclage in, so I was confident in that. That stays in. So I was like, okay, like I'm confident that that's in place. I can carry a baby to full term. And the pregnancy was, you know, awesome. It was the best. I felt extra. I didn't realize how different I felt not being on fertility meds, in a pregnancy, like just having it all be natural was, I'm grateful I got to experience that for as long as I did, but, it was at 20 weeks and I had no issues up until this point. It was one weekend. It was in the fall. It was in September of 2021, and we were just at one of those like fall fests walking around, and I started having like some lower back pain, and I just thought it was like growing pains being 20 weeks pregnant, you know, popping and being a little bit bigger, and didn't really think anything of it. And then the next day I still had the lower back pain, and it was progressively getting worse, and I was getting worried. But at this point I'm just like, my gut was knowing that I should be seen, but then I also was like kind of just frozen in fear. I was like, I know if I go there, I'm either going to the hospital and not coming home for a while, or I'm going to the hospital and this is it, like for this pregnancy. Like that's just, I couldn't really grasp either of those things, especially with two children at home and how hard it was for my son last time, or my husband last time. And so, but then it got to the point where I'm like, okay, what am I thinking? I have this cerclage and if something is going on, like my health could be at risk. And I am a mom, so I have to take care of myself. So we put the boys to bed that night. I had my brother and sister-in-law come over to stay with them. My husband took me to the hospital because by the end of the night, I started having some spotting. And that's when I was like, okay, yeah, something's not right. Something's not right at all. And was admitted to the hospital. Was in there. I was definitely in preterm labor. And within 30 minutes of being at the hospital, it went from like pain level 0 to like 10. And I was in like full blown labor and bleeding a lot. The first time they checked the ultrasound, baby's heartbeat was fine. And it was getting to the point where they're like weighing the risks of my health versus trying to save the baby and wait it out. And because I have to have a C-section, that kind of threw a wrench and everything as well. I mean, it was one of those things like they have to make a call. And it ended up being like right before, I remember her asking me, like, are you okay? Like I think we should go into the OR. And obviously I know in that moment, like that means I have to end my pregnancy to save my life. And all I could think about in that moment was really just my boys, because I was like, I can't risk my health. And, you know, and she did one last ultrasound. And that's when she told me, I just want you to know, and I'm so sorry, she said, but I wanted you to know before we go back there that unfortunately, you know, there is no heartbeat. Your baby has passed. And it was at that point that I just like wanted to just close my eyes and just like, put me to sleep, wake me up when this is over. This is like a nightmare. And we found out that it was going to be a girl again. And we were just very excited about that. And we thought maybe our family would be complete at this point. We've been through so much. We miraculously got pregnant on our own. Like, let's not tempt fate at that point is kind of how we were feeling. And so I had a C-section. And when I woke up, of course, I was able to hold her. And because of the cuddle cot, we were able to spend, you know, she was in the room with us for 2 days as I was there recovering. And we got pictures, and my mom and sister were able to hold our daughter. We named her Marin. Grieving when you already have children at home is so different. I don't think it's better or worse, because to the same degree, I just had to like get back up, and you know, I have others that I need to care for. And so it was a weird grieving process. And also our boys knew that I was pregnant. I was visibly pregnant. We had told them, we did wait as long as we could to tell them to try. I mean, I felt conflicted on that, because I was like, I want to wait to tell them because I don't want to hurt their hearts. But at the same time, they actually knew about, they call them their angel sissies, like the twins that we lost before them, but just because of teddy bears that we had with their names on it. And that's just how we talked about it with them at their ages. But this time I'm like, I would talk about it anyway. So I think we just need to tell them regardless of how this is going to go. And yeah, we had told them, well, this was 20 weeks, I think, the month prior. So they had a month, they knew they were getting a sister. And that was hard just to explain it, and whole nother level. So after that, we were just pretty dumbfounded and just not sure what to do next. It was heartbreaking to think of our family, like it was heartbreaking to think that this might be it, because my body was just not. We met with our MFM doctor, who we trust a lot, who has been with us over the years. And he was like, I don't know what we would do differently. You know, he's like, I even consulted with two other trusted doctors, and no one can really figure this out. There's just so many elements. You know, they started thinking, well, they did find out that with my daughter, Marin, I went into labor. So everything was so quick because it was placental abruption. Which I didn't have any warning signs for. I didn't really fit like the specific criteria of like being at risk for that. But that's what it was. And it made total sense because it just came out of nowhere. And so then they were thinking like, I don't know, maybe that was what happened with the twins, because it was very spontaneous. Mm-hmm. again, it was abrupt and they couldn't figure it out. So, but then there's my son who truly, like, my cervix wasn't holding. So I think it's just like a slew of things going on. And he's like, could you get pregnant again? And could it be fine? Maybe. He's like, but could it not be fine? And could you not be fine? Yeah, maybe. He's like, if, you know, I know you have a beautiful family already. He said, I am not comfortable. He's like, you can do whatever you want, but I am not comfortable with you carrying another pregnancy. Yeah. And truly going into that meeting with him, I think my heart knew that. And I wasn't ready to, like, because it felt like I was like, and again, this is all just, I think, years of being like in the infertility mindset. And
processing it.
Right. Yeah. And I felt like I was giving up or failed. And I know now, I mean, I didn't, and I truly didn't want to go on. I didn't want to risk my health. I didn't want to put that burden on my family. I wanted to enjoy our family. But I still really wrestled with, like, we had 6 embryos that I felt like we worked really hard for, and just seeing my boys there and they were a product of our IVF, it was really hard to, like, let that go. Obviously we let time pass, and I really had to grieve the fact that I wasn't going to carry a pregnancy again. And then we started talking about, like, is this it for us? Or do we really want to, you know, go after the family that we've always thought we wanted, you know, with a bigger family. And that's when I started looking into surrogacy. And I always thought that surrogacy was just like for celebrities or like people who like just didn't feel like carrying their pregnancy or whatever. Cause it just wasn't in my space and I didn't hear anybody talking about it really. And it just felt unattainable, to be completely honest. I was like, in what world can we take on this journey? Not only just like financially, but like managing it and figuring it all out and emotionally dealing with it. So we did a lot of research and eventually came to the conclusion that we wanted the help of an agency and went from there. And then it was after we matched with our agency, this was May 2022. It took 11 months to get matched with our surrogate, which truthfully was good for us because we needed time to process things a lot more. We were still grieving all of the things and really wrapping our mind around it. But after I did a quick Google search, I realized how long of a process it was going to be, especially like right after COVID. So yeah, we matched. And then from the second we matched with our surrogate, I feel like it's been like time has just flown. And I don't even know how we are welcoming our daughter here in a couple months. And of course, prior to starting surrogacy, we did end up having our embryos tested. We wanted to, not only was it a requirement of our agency, but we wanted to, of course, put the healthiest foot forward and make sure that we were just minimizing any risk of anything going wrong for us or the surrogate. So out of those 6 embryos, they had to thaw them to biopsy them. And we were told, okay, there's like a less than 1% chance of losing one in the thaw. And we did lose one embryo. So out of the 5, 2 came back abnormal. 1 was labeled mosaic and then 2 were normal. And I found that to be so shocking because I just didn't truly understand genetic testing. And I was really just like, how did they even remotely, all of our embryos were by our fertility clinic were graded the same, like as far as like the structure of the embryo. So in my head, I was like, how did they even choose our sons? Like, and they worked on the first time, they were normal embryos and
very lucky.
Yeah. I was just like in shock too, because here I thought we'd have to decide what we were going to do with leftover embryos. And, you know, we only had the two normal ones and we were thankful because we're like, okay, hopefully we can bring home one more child. And, yeah. And it worked the first time with our surrogate. And we found out both of our normal embryos were both female. So we were excited about that as well. I'm excited about it now. It's a little, I'm a little nervous for the feelings that will probably smack me in the face when she's born. Just given that, you know, we've lost 3 daughters and it's going to be wild to see her and just kind of imagine what her sisters would have been like. But it's pretty amazing that surrogates exist and there are women out there willing to help other people because, yeah, I mean, telling my story, I'm just so grateful. There's like not enough words to describe it.
Thank you for sharing all of that. It's so moving. And I think you and your husband are so brave, and we're so brave every single time that you try it again. And even going through surrogacy is really brave, and trusting someone and that whole thing. I'm excited for you to have a big win in the end. And I'm curious, with all of this that you've been through so much trauma that I can't even fathom. How have you and your husband processed that, or what type of support have you gotten to help you get through that and stay so positive?
Yeah. It's changed over the years. It started with, after our first miscarriages, it was more on, well, no, we both went, we joined, a share group that was part of our hospital to connect with other lost parents. Which was nice to just meet other parents and, feel seen and have a safe space to talk about it and hear other people say your baby's name, meant a lot, and that helped. And then as our journey went on, we've gone to therapy separately. We've gone to therapy together. That's been huge for us. Just to realize, cause you know, there's so many times throughout this journey, and whether someone has a journey as long as this or not, even just going through IVF or surrogacy or whatever led you there, I mean, it takes a toll on your marriage. And, you know, I remember after our first miscarriage, someone told me, like, this is either going to bring you guys together, or it's going to tear you apart. So really make your marriage a priority. And that's kind of been at the basis of everything for us. You know, we always have to come back to us. If it's not going to benefit us, if we're not in the same, that was the biggest thing too, is if we're not in the same place and both really wanting to do this, then it's not going to work. And we have to be ready. We both have to be ready for it. And so talking about it and really checking in with each other was the biggest thing that was helpful for us. And yeah, and therapy and talking it through, because there were so many times too that we thought, we just assume things of each other, right? I assume that he was just fine. And, you know, but really we learned how differently we process grief. And especially in this kind of situation, with pregnancy and stuff, you know, a woman is going to experience different emotions than a man and at different times. And so it's not that I'm grieving more or he's grieving less. We just grieve differently. And, you know, we learned a lot about each other too, in regards to how we handle like next steps. And for me, it always brought me comfort having answers. So I was big into research and reaching out. And for him, he needed like time. He needed time to just like really let it sink in. And for me, that would just like eat me alive. I'm like, I need to talk it out and like learn more. But I learned that about him. So it was a priority to like let each other do things in our own way without judgment. And I think that helped us a lot to individually stay positive, which helped us move forward together. But I highly suggest therapy for anyone who's experienced any part of this journey, even if you don't think that you need it. And even if you haven't experienced loss, I mean, infertility and going through IVF or doing something that wasn't your original plan in general, can take a toll on you. And I think it's just always helpful to be able to talk it out with a third party that's not in it, see it from a different perspective.
Yeah. Thank you so much for being vulnerable and sharing your story. I think it's easier said than done, but for women who decide to be surrogates, I know there is this thought, well, who is it that the intended parents, you know, what type of people are those? And they're regular moms and dads and that are, you know, just trying to grow their family. And for me and every woman out there who is considering surrogacy, to put a face and to put an understanding of really just the struggle and the heartbreak. Yeah. It's necessary and it's hard. So, I mean, I knew your story, but I didn't know fully your story. And my heart broke even just in the moments of hearing the struggles and how strong you are. And so thank you for sharing that. I really, really appreciate it. And I think that our listeners will be grateful to understand, you know, just what somebody goes through to get to this place and just how strong you are through this. So thank you.
Yeah. Well, thank you for giving me the opportunity to share it, because like I mentioned, it's actually really therapeutic for me to not all the time tell the story, but like to relive the moments, because it really, it always reminds me like just how grateful I am. And it helps me be the best mom I can be, because, you know, in the day-to-day life of everything, once you, I'm just going to say, are on the other side of infertility, I should, you know, and you have kids at home, you forget like everything, you know, certain things seem, it's all relative. Things seem hard, potty training, you know, kids are acting out, whatever it is. And it's in the moments that I like retell our story and just the journey we took to get here. And I see it differently now. I look at my kids and I'm like, wow, like I can't even believe you're here. Like, it's just wild. So thank you for giving me the opportunity to share again. And I hope listeners can resonate with it. And I hope any surrogates or anyone wanting to be a surrogate listening can just really understand that, there are a lot of parents out there who have all different paths of, and at the end of the day, they just have so much love to give. And I forget who told me this, but in regards to grief, it's just like, grief isn't just like being sad. It's just like having all this built up love with nowhere to go. Mm-hmm. And when someone described that to me, it's like, that hit home so hard, because having to grieve how I've created my family was one thing, but it's really just because my husband and I have so much love left to give. And so the fact that there are surrogates out there to help parents achieve that is just amazing.
I think you guys are going to raise some beautiful children together too, and really just create some really strong little people in the world that are resilient and full of gratitude. And I'm just grateful that there's an opportunity for you to continue building your family, and that it didn't have to end, you know, the way that you might have feared that it did. And I have so much sympathy for your husband and the fear that he probably felt, thinking he was going to lose you too so many times, because obviously you love each other very much, and that was probably really scary for him too. Yeah. So thank you so much for sharing. I think it's super powerful for people to hear, and especially for me, as a reminder not to take for granted that what's easy for some people is harder for other people. And I think a lot of people diminish surrogacy as a way to build your family and think of it as, oh, celebrities, rich people that don't want to get pregnant or are too lazy to carry their, or don't, they're worried about their bodies. And there's just so many people that would do anything to carry their own babies and can't. And this is their option. And I'm glad it's an option, and I'm happy for you guys. And I can't wait to hear and see. I'm going to be following your Instagram obsessively, waiting for your daughter to be born.
It's my daughter's birthday on April 17th. So you will be top of priority. I will absolutely be sending you so much love.
Thank you.
I just can't wait to hear how that goes. Do you have any advice for parents as a whole who might be struggling with the idea of what are their next steps, whether it be surrogacy or IVF?
Oh yeah. Let me think here. I have a lot of little bits of, let me think what my biggest piece of advice would be. I know for me, I think stay open, be open to the different ways that you can build your family. Like I said, it might not be the original plan that you had, but it can still be a really beautiful plan and a beautiful story and a beautiful way to bring your children to you. Doing your research is also the biggest thing. I can't say it enough to always get a second opinion, reach out to somebody who's been through it. I think personal experience has taught me more than like anything I ever Googled. I mean, just hearing it straight from someone who's been through it, whether it is IVF or surrogacy, don't be afraid to reach out. Either of these options, it's nothing to be ashamed of. It's not like you failed. It's not, it's just not something to be ashamed of. I just come at everything from a grateful heart is my biggest thing, because I'm just grateful that the technology exists. I'm grateful that surrogacy exists. I'm grateful that I know it's not an option for everyone. I'm grateful that we're able to do this. So I think just don't be afraid to be open about it. And when you first mention it or start talking about it, I promise you people will come to you and be like, oh, well, I know so-and-so, or I did this. There's always someone who can relate to one step. And, you know, they always say it takes a village to raise your kids. And I've heard this more and more lately, but it can take a village to have a child too. And we don't like shame people for having like, oh, you needed a babysitter or you needed help doing this in your household. So this is like it's the same idea. In my opinion, you shouldn't feel any shame for needing help to get somewhere. So just be open about it if you can, even if it's to one person, and do your research would be the biggest thing and don't be set in your ways or your idea of how things should happen. That was the biggest lesson in this last decade of my life, is like, you can't plan everything. Like, you're not in control. You cannot plan everything. And the second you can be open to different avenues, I think, is when you'll find real happiness and hope. And that would be my biggest takeaway.
So good. So good.
Thank you so much, Jacqueline.
Thank you.